Hi, this is Alistair Jenks standing in for Alison Sheridan of the NoSilicast Mac podcast hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, March 26th, 2017, and this is show number 620. Now, this is where I would describe to you the awesome guest I interviewed for Chit Chat Across the Pond, but this time around, the scheduling gods were not in my corner, and I have been unable to bring you anyone. To try to make up for that, I'd like to bring your attention to a TEDx video I came across recently, which combines some recent buzz from my place of work on design thinking with one of Alison's favourite topics, accessibility for the disabled. In this TEDx Mid-Atlantic talk, Elise Roy talks about losing her hearing as a child and how she now considers her disability to be the best thing that's ever happened to her. She describes design thinking and how it can enable innovation that not only benefits the disabled, but everyone. The video is just over 13 minutes long and well worth your time. In this week's show, I have a miniature review of using the Apple Watch Series 2 for swim workouts. I'll quickly review 26 Mac apps you didn't know you already had. Alison will pop by with two more videos from the CSUN Assistive Technology Conference. I'll make some recommendations for podcasts you might want to listen to that aren't about technology. Terry delivers on his call out from Alison with a review of Ghostreader text-to-speech software. And I'll finish up with a review of the Beats X Bluetooth earbuds with Apple W1 chip. So, let's get started. I've seen and heard numerous reviews of Apple Watch Series 2, but not many seem to mention the newly available swim workouts, so I thought I'd give a brief rundown of how they've been working for me. There are two basic types of swim workout, pool swim and open water swim. The differences between these are much like between indoor and outdoor variations of walk, run and cycle. The open water swim will utilize GPS to track your route, whereas the pool swim will not. As with all workout types, once you select the basic swim type, you get to choose between a goal for calorie burn, time or distance, or an open workout. But in the case of a pool swim, you are first asked for the length of the pool. It defaults to 25 meters, yards for those of you in non-metric nations, which is perfect for my local pool, but can be set as low as 1 meter, and as high as, well, I stopped trying to find the limit after 1 kilometer. I've only used the pool swim workout, and I found it to be pretty reliable if you swim with a regular stroke. Initially, I did a couple of open workouts, and it kept track of distance swum very accurately, always within a couple of meters of a multiple of 25, but sometimes would increase the lap count by 1 over what I had actually done. I've put this down to breaking stroke mid-length when I had to dodge an obstacle. On a later fixed calorie goal, the distance readout immediately went to 1.2 kilometers and stayed there the entire workout, which must be a bug. In any case, the resulting saved workouts seem to be accurate. I don't have the lung capacity to swim freestyle, so do a side stroke, and this does not seem to phase the watch, although it reports in the iPhone workout app that I was doing freestyle. It is now possible to customize the readouts you see on your watch face during the workout. By default, the pool swim shows elapsed time, active calories, laps, and total distance. I have added heart rate to the readouts and have used this to see just how hard I'm working in the water. Turns out, harder than any other form of exercise I do. In terms of operating the watch around water, the watch enters a screen lock mode because the water affects the basic operation of the touchscreen. You can press on both the crown and side buttons to pause and resume the workout, and while paused you can rotate the crown to eject any water from the speaker cavity and unlock the screen. In practice, I found I really have the need to interact with the watch during my workout. Pausing to rest a while does not alter the outcome of the workout other than time taken. It can be a little tricky to finish the workout straight away when you stop. Where on earth do you dry a finger when you're still in a swimming pool? After a few orientation swims, I now set a calorie goal, in fact a kilojoule goal, for my swim, and it is very easy to roll my wrist up exactly as I do normally to check my progress. It's kind of freaky, yet cool, to be able to do this underwater too. Often when Alison puts out a call for material for the show, I'll take a look at my installed Mac apps via Launchpad to see if there's anything relatively new that's worth a review. Faced with the prospect of sourcing an entire show, I did the same thing, but what I noticed was not something new. In fact, it's a whole lot of somethings, and they're all quite old. There's a folder on the default Launchpad configuration called Other, which contains all 16 applications from the Utility folder that lives inside your Applications folder, plus 9 other applications that aren't usually featured in Apple promotional materials. I thought it might be useful to listeners if I quickly ran through what's in there, and maybe you'll discover something useful you didn't know you had. First up, I'll cover those applications that reside in the Utilities folder. We've come across some of these before, but I'm sure there will be at least one you didn't know about. Activity Monitor can be useful if you want to figure out what's happening on your Mac. In the days of spinning hard drives, okay, that's still today for some, you'd sometimes hear your hard drive crunching away constantly and notice your system performance degrade. Looking in the Activity Monitor can tell you what applications are reading from and writing to the drive. You can also see what's using up your CPU cycles, your memory, your network bandwidth, and gauge what apps are consuming the most energy and therefore battery life if you're using a laptop. Airport Utility is the tool you need to set up your Apple Airport router or time capsule device. Of course, you'll be familiar with this because you're always installing updates when those blinking orange lights appear, aren't you? Audio MIDI setup is something most people won't ever need, but has some of the more powerful options of macOS audio for you to fiddle with. It has three sections: audio, MIDI, and network. The audio window is most useful, as here you can create aggregate audio devices that combine audio from more than one physical device into a single one, useful for apps like GarageBand, which insist on using only a single device. There are also fine-grained controls of audio quality, volume, and channel balance. The MIDI window will be useful for those who have MIDI devices attached, and I'm not actually sure what the network window does. Presumably there are such things as network audio devices. Bluetooth File Exchange is probably of limited use today. With it, you can send any file to another device over Bluetooth. I guess it could be useful for older style feature phones, but I'm struggling to see the utility of sending a file to my Magic Mouse. Bootcamp Assistant is where you go if you want to set up a dual boot copy of Windows on your Mac. It's a wizard-style app which will take you through all the necessary steps. ColorSync Utility is a collection of tools for managing color profiles on your Mac. For the most part, these are best left alone, but for some professions, such as print design, color management is vital. For the layperson, there are a few interesting aspects. You can click on each installed color profile and see a 3D model of the color space it covers. And there's a color calculator which you can use to convert, for example, RGB values to HSV values. Console is the tool for looking at the numerous log files that reside on your Mac. If you're having serious or recurring problems with your Mac and don't quite know what to blame, having a look in console can sometimes give you a clue, although be prepared for a lot of gibberish to go flying by. Digital Color Meter is a simple but useful tool if you're trying to use colors in your documents or designs that are present in other places. It provides a small window that magnifies the screen area under your mouse pointer and shows you the color values of either the single pixel or averaged across a larger square. Disk Utility is one many will have used to reformat a hard drive or SSD, or figure out why you're getting errors about them and trying to fix them. Grab is a screen capture utility. It's of limited use because there are keyboard shortcuts to do most of what it offers. However, you can also do a full screen grab after a delay of 10 seconds. This can be useful when you want to capture transient items on the screen, like a drag in progress. Grapher is a real gem, but will only appeal to some people. It is a simple graph plotter which will plot an equation in 2D or 3D space. In the case of 3D, you can use your mouse to rotate the graph. It's actually pretty cool. Keychain Access gives you a view into all those secure items that macOS is keeping for you. Anytime you ask macOS or Safari to remember a password, this is where it goes. It's useful to open Keychain Access if you're having troubles with a particular login so you can see exactly what has been remembered. It's also the home of encryption and authentication certificates. Migration Assistant is the process you normally run on a new Mac during setup, but if you elect to skip it when prompted, you can always relaunch it to get assistance migrating data from one Mac to another. Script Editor is a text editor that specializes in editing scripts. While traditionally only used for AppleScript, since OS X Yosemite, it has also supported JavaScript. All the JavaScript skills you've developed through Bart and Allison's Programming by Stealth series can be used in automating your Mac workflows. System Information is also available from the System Report button in the About This Mac window. It is a detailed, hierarchical list of all the hardware features of your Mac along with many software settings in a simple text-based output. If you want to know how fast your Thunderbolt and USB ports are, this will tell you. It'll tell you what RAM you have installed, your optical disc burning capabilities, your native display resolution, and even list every USB device connected to your Mac. Terminal should be very familiar to you if you've been listening for any amount of time. The command line interface to macOS is not scary now, is it? Now that Bart has tamed it for us with the Taming the Terminal series. And finally, VoiceOver Utility gives you an enormous amount of control over the wonderful VoiceOver technology in macOS. I'll stop here for now, and we'll pick this up later with the remaining 9 apps.
Hey, Alistair, I hope you don't mind if I sneak in here. You knew I wouldn't be able to stay away. Well, Steve's been hard at work on the video interviews we did at CSUN's Assistive Technology Conference. He's created audio versions for the podcast as usual, so let's have a listen to them now. I'm with Misa Meng in the BrainPort booth, and she promises they've got a product that can let you see with your tongue. Come on, Misa, what are you talking about here?
All right, so the BrainPort is a sensory substitution device for people who are totally blind. So instead of using the eyes to see, the device actually allows you to use your tongue to feel what it is that you're looking at. So you're looking at it like you're not convinced. So the way it works is it's a pair of sunglasses with the camera mounted on it. Whatever the camera picks up, we do have a mug here. Whatever the camera is picking up is processed through our controller, and it's actually displayed electrically on this tongue display, which we call the intraoral device.
So what she's got, again, is a pair of sunglasses with a camera on it. She's got it pointed at the mug. This tongue thing is maybe an inch by an inch, and it's got a bunch of little silver dots.
Correct.
And you stick that in your mouth. And what does that do?
So you feel vibrations or electrical stimulus on the tongue in the shape of whatever it was that you were looking at. So in this particular case, you would actually feel the shape of this mug, including where the handle is. Is it on the left side versus the right side? You actually receive all that information on your tongue. And the brain is actually smart enough to process that information, and you start to understand, oh, this is what I'm looking at, or this is where the handle is, so I need to reach on the left side versus the right side.
I don't know. You're saying that my tongue has the dexterity to tell the difference between all those different dots. I mean, this is obviously low resolution, but you can tell it's a cup with a handle. Come on, my tongue can figure that out?
Absolutely. So the tongue is not really the smart part. It's actually the brain. So they're kind of a team. So the tongue brings in the information, and the brain actually processes the information the same way it does our vision.
So does it take a while to learn this?
It can. So depending on the individual, it can take an hour. It can take 10 hours. But 10 hours is actually our normal training protocol. So during that time, you learn how to use the device. You learn to interpret the information. And then you kind of build skills so that when you go out into the real world, you're able to work yourself through any possibility or any process.
So I would imagine it's also difficult because you'd have to learn, okay, if you were always blind, that's what a cup looks like. I mean, I guess you can feel what a cup looks like, but a tree or there's a lot of things you can't just go up and touch, or people get mad at you if you do.
Exactly. So that is definitely something that we work on as well. So if you're congenitally blind, the training process is a little bit different than someone who has acquired blindness, but it's not a barrier in, you can still use the device.
So I'm really glad you're not letting people demonstrate this.
Yeah, we do have people that come in and they are begging us. They're like, I don't care if it's dirty, I still want to put it in my mouth. And we're like, no, trust me, you don't want to put that thing in your mouth.
Really, just rub your hand on your face and then touch it again, I guess.
Exactly.
So is the BrainPort available yet?
It is. So we received FDA approval last summer, so it is available in the United States. We also have training sites across the United States, so if someone is interested, they would actually go to one of these training sites and they can actually demo the device for free.
Oh, okay, and that way they can find out whether it would actually work for them?
Exactly.
And what's the price point on this?
The price is currently $10,000, and so we are working on reimbursement. It's not a quick process, so we're kind of chipping away one day at a time, but hopefully...
So that's working with the government, Medicaid, and all those insurance things?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, well, that's a stiff price, but what would you give to be able to see?
Right, and hopefully we can drop that a little bit as time goes on.
Sure, and how would people find BrainPort?
So you could go to our website, wicab.com, and you can find all the information on there in terms of where is it available, where are the training sites, what is it, what is this tongue, weird tongue thing, and there are also some videos on YouTube as well.
All right, and are you expanding beyond the U.S. or just U.S. only for now?
We are also available in China and I believe different parts of Europe.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
The vision-to-tongue display from BrainPort had to be one of the weirdest things we saw at CSUN, but it also demonstrates what I love about going to CSUN. We find so many creative and interesting assistive technology devices. Seriously, they help you see with your tongue. How cool is that? I'm in a booth with eSight, Frank Jones, and I am so bad at names, Yvonne Felix. And this is a product that I looked at online before I came, and this is somebody I actually wanted to make sure I came to see. So what is eSight?
Well, thanks for coming to see us. Appreciate it. eSight is a wearable head-mounted display and camera system. It's used to help people who have low vision see. So it's, we can get into the technical details if you'd like.
Oh, you betcha. That's where we go.
Okay, perfect. So if you take a look over here, Yvonne is wearing her head-mounted display. It has a camera built into it. Rangefinders underneath. Those rangefinders are used to focus the camera automatically. So it's continuously auto-focusing. You can look at near objects, far objects. It's presenting the information to Yvonne's eyes through near-to-eye displays.
So how is it doing the distances? How is it figuring that out?
Well, time-of-flight rangefinders.
Okay.
So these rangefinders are calibrated.
Infrared or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Image processing happens in that loop, so every video frame is processed. And the trick to doing that is to do it with very low latency. So, good frame rate so that you don't see flicker on the screen.
But you can turn her head and not
feel dizzy.
Not get sick.
Exactly. No, that's hugely important and necessary.
So we're getting distances from that, but how is this actually helping her see?
Right. So it's a combination of magnification and image processing that's allowing that to happen. So image processing being contrast as a good example, or let's say binarizing an image.
So like contrast detection on focusing on some digital cameras, use contrast detection for the edge?
Yeah, that would be detection of contrast. In our case, we're actually modifying the image to exaggerate contrast.
Okay.
So let's say we have two shades of gray that our healthy eyes can recognize, but the less healthy eye couldn't. Turn that into black and white, just as an extreme exaggeration, that allows the healthy eye to see that difference.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you, Yvonne, what visual impairment do you have?
I have Stargardt's disease.
Okay. And so what's the difference between not wearing these glasses and wearing them for you?
So if I tilt these up out of the way and just use my natural vision, I have a scotoma centrally that takes up 98% of my visual field.
And a scotoma is?
It's a blind spot.
Okay.
So I have a central blind spot. Peripherally, I can see my hands move and very little detail, and I can't see color. When I use the eyewear, I can actually see your face, and I can see you looking at me that you have glasses on.
That level of detail.
Yes, yes. So I can get as close to you as actually seeing your pupil.
Oh wow!
And the color of your eyes, I think.
So we're looking at her right now, looking at me. In a minute, they said they're going to let me put on the glasses, and we'll see what I see, what I'm able to see with it.
Yeah.
So when she flips this up, it's really cool looking, actually. It's a big white thing it's got two eyes, which is kind of...
She's accessorized.
Oh, have you? You added those?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, they're awesome. You should totally productize that. It's two, like, googly eyes sitting on it. That's awesome. And then I can see the detectors and receiver there. But when you flip it up, it sort of looks like regular glasses underneath.
Yeah, so my prescription's actually built in, and they just sit in regular frames.
Oh, I see. So, Frank, what different kinds of vision loss is this good for?
A lot of types of disease. Macular degeneration is one of the larger ones. Diabetic retinopathy, Stargardt's, Leber's, quite a long list. You can see them on our website. I think it's listed there. But, generally... You certainly need visual function. This is not for the completely blind. A lot of users are around the 20-200 sort of range. Some are as bad as 20-1,000 or even a little bit worse than that. If you're 20-60 or better, you don't really need the glasses.
Okay, I see. All right, so should I put these on?
Sure.
All right, so you're going to have to hold the mic.
Okay, I'll be the interviewer now.
All right, see.
Okay, I'll be asking the questions.
This is what you wanted. All right, so I assume I should take my glasses off.
You know what? If you have distance prescription and we can fit it under, is it a mild prescription?
It's a mild prescription.
Okay, then you'd be fine to put it on.
Because I'm also wearing contacts.
Okay.
It's a long story.
Everything
goes above my head?
That's right. So that goes on your forehead.
Oh, okay. All right.
And,
does that go on the end of my nose? No.
It goes above your eyebrows. And there is a rear strap, which we haven't attached yet.
Okay, it's not staying on.
Yeah, you're going to have to hold on
just
to
hold
it
on?
Without that rear strap.
Okay, so fire it up.
Okay.
Make
it's
it go.
Not turned on right now.
Okay, so there's a looks to be like a PlayStation controller down here, All right, I see an eSight logo. It's been looking pretty good so far.
There we go. So, Yvonne, do you want to drive the UI? Then?
Yeah, only I'm going to look at Yvonne.
Sure.
She did it to me. All right, keep the mic in close here. They don't want to miss a minute of this. All right, so I see Yvonne. And now what are you going to do to me here?
So I'm going to show you the magnification, or the zoom first, which is 24 times zoom.
Let's lift your hands up a little bit so they can see the screen. Oh, my goodness. I looked away, and now I'm looking at her nose. My, you have pretty teeth.
Thank you. So that can go up 24 times, but I'm not going to do that to my face. I can actually change the color contrast, or there's binary, different binary modes. So you get black and white.
Everything's black and white.
White with black. That should be black with yellow.
Wow.
White with blue.
So the different colors, why would we have that? Because some people can see some colors better in contrast?
Yeah, that'd be a Frank answer.
Yeah, that's right. Different.
Frank tries to give Yvonne the mic on that one.
Yeah, different people have different preferences, and it also can be task dependent. So depending on what you're trying to do, you may use the binarization for reading, but maybe not for looking at a face or orienting around the room.
Well, so people would actually read with this?
Absolutely. That's one of the big tasks that people perform with it.
Before, I was going to show you the menu, but also I'll show you an example. So if you were looking at print, something that you could do to make it a little bit easier is actually pause the image.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can turn up the magnification or zoom while it's paused, and you can actually pan your head around the image.
Oh, yeah. So I'm moving my head around on a still image of her right now. So that's if you wanted to capture something you wanted to read, for example, you don't want to be wiggling around.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and also like, we can take photos with the unit as well. So this is really helpful in a classroom setting, or let's say you're in a meeting and there's PowerPoints up. You could take a picture of every file that's presented and then look at it later the way you're looking at that still image now.
Uh-huh.
The same is also true for computer input. So we have an HDMI interface to the device. So this can be your computer monitor. And you can zoom in on that computer display, pan around just like you're doing right now.
By the way, I am noticing when I move it around, the frame rate is pretty good. A little bit of lag, but not much, really. That's pretty interesting. So I'm going to take this off now. And Frank, I'm going to take away your microphone. Frank, okay. I'll take away your mic. Not Mike, I'll take away your Frank. So is this product on the market today?
Yes, it is. Yeah, this is our third generation technology.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we just announced this product 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay, and I must have seen that press release.
Probably.
So
yeah.
How much does this cost?
This costs $99.95 US dollars.
Okay, and is it covered under Medicaid or any of those things yet?
Not Medicaid, but there are some private insurance companies that can pay for part of it at times. It's very jurisdictional, depends on the insurer. So there's people it works for, they can afford it, they pay for it. We also have employees who work on affordability, so they'll help people navigate either state programs.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Things like that. There's also benefactors who really try to help other people. So
that's pretty neat.
Through philanthropy, basically.
Oh, I see. So, would somebody be able to test this out first to see if it worked for their particular impairment?
Right. That's the normal process. So we have demonstrations that we perform in major centers all over the U.S., Canada. We're going to Europe fairly soon as well.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, presence in these various locations. And you contact us online at eSightEyewear.com.
And that's E-S-I-G-H-T, eyewear.com.
Correct.
Great. Thank you very much. And you did great. Thank you for your
time,
Yvonne.
Thank you.
It's easy to lump all of one challenge together, like blind is blind, right? Well, actually, it isn't. The explanation from Yvonne on what she can see with only peripheral vision and how the eSight eyewear helps her to see is completely different from what Terry with retinal damage could see using the prosthetic eye from Second Sight that we played you a few weeks ago. By the way, I loved Yvonne, mostly because she stuck plastic googly eyes on the front of her eSight glasses just for the comedy. Okay, Alistair, I guess I'll hand the show back to you again.
Thanks for that, Allison. You know something? I think those eSight glasses are what Google Glasses should have been. Now I'll cover off the additional applications that appear in the other folder in Launchpad. Automator is the very approachable way to automate stuff on your Mac. It uses a simple drag-and-drop interface to build workflows that can do anything from adding calendar items to downloading images from a web page to starting a photos slideshow and much, much more. This is worth having a play with. Chess is a pretty decent 3D chess game. It doesn't have a lot of options, but you can play against your Mac or via Game Center against anyone remotely. DVD Player is the basic DVD player app that by default launches when you insert a commercial DVD video. Fontbook is the tool to manage all your installed fonts. You can see all of the font names, whether there are any issues, some third-party fonts may be incomplete for example, delete them, install new ones, and see a sample of any font by selecting it. Image Capture allows for importing images from cameras and scanners. This is very much an Apple minimum viable application, and you're generally better off with a dedicated photo management app such as Photos or the software that came with your scanner. But it does serve well as a backstop when you just need the basic functionality. QuickTime is Apple's video player. It has limited support of different video types, but does have the incredibly useful ability to record your Mac screen, or a section of it, as a video. Again, it is a very limited application, but it has its uses. Stickies is a digital implementation of Post-it notes. Try it! TextEdit is one you've probably all come across at some point, perhaps in the early days of following the Programming by Stealth series. Once again, it is a basic app that is useful up to its limitations. And finally, Time Machine is the app that lets you go through your Time Machine backups to locate and restore the old files. Hopefully you found something of interest in that list. All of the mentioned apps are installed on every Mac by default, so your wallet is not at risk. The majority of podcasts I listen to are on technology topics, because technology is both a hobby and a profession for me. Over the years, I've continually found new tech podcasts by hearing about them on ones I'm already listening to. But I also have other hobbies and interests, and I find it harder to pick up new podcasts on these topics, I guess because I don't have a critical mass on any topic. So I thought I'd share with you a few podcasts that I listen to that are not about technology. Anybody who knows me even slightly will know that aviation is in my blood. The AvTalk podcast has only just been launched. Two guys from Flight Radar 24 shoot the breeze on whatever aviation topics take their fancy. Episode 1 includes talk about a famous webcam at Maho Beach, some new coverage for Flight Radar 24, coping with a 17-hour non-stop flight, freight flights in Alaska, New York's closed runway, and new airline liveries. For many years now, I've listened to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase, a monthly podcast produced by a flight attendant on a major US airline. She mostly records stories that are told to her by fellow flight attendants, pilots, and sometimes passengers, but she is also an avid traveler and recounts tales from her latest adventures, like a road trip alone around the perimeter of Iceland, where she loses control of her rental car on slick ice, or the time she paid for a boat ride to an island, only to be dropped off well offshore and told to walk the rest of the way. Another fairly recent arrival, with 21 episodes so far, is the fortnightly Ungeniused from Relay FM. This is a podcast dedicated to unusual or particularly interesting Wikipedia pages. Topics to date have included the world's littlest skyscraper, the Emu War, Concorde, and the Great Molasses Flood. Each show is generally 10 to 20 minutes long and covers the topic at a reasonable depth, including some research beyond Wikipedia. My final recommendation is not strictly outside of technology, but I can't go past mentioning it. On a previous episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond, I spoke with Andrew J. Clark, an iOS developer. Andrew undertakes various projects from time to time, which have included a number of podcasts. The particular one I'm going to point you to is called Warp Pipe. It is a three-part history of the Nintendo company. Don't think, however, that if you don't care about video games, then you should give this one a miss. I'm not a huge fan myself, but I am a fan of Andrew's work, and this is a real gem. More than anything, it is an historical tale which I found fascinating from start to finish. Andrew doesn't just talk into a microphone, he's a great storyteller, and he added a topical soundtrack which elevates this production to more than just a podcast. It comes with my highest recommendation. A few weeks ago on episode 617, Alison put a call out for listener contributions. And in that show, she said, "I'm looking at you, Terry." So, here's Terry.
"I am Terry from Holland, and I would like to do a review of Ghost Reader from Convenience Wear. Let me start by the problem to be solved. As a graphic designer, I am often the last person to see a text before it is multiplied in a huge quantity. So I need to be very good in proofreading. But whenever I just want to read, I am still scanning for typos, punctuation errors and grammar mistakes. It takes forever for me to finish a book. Fortunately, many books are available as audiobooks. But many other books are not. Of course, my Mac comes with text-to-speech capability. For example, Pages can read its text out loud. But it is not easy to pause a long text and continue the next day. Wouldn't it be great if you could turn longer texts into an audiobook? This is where Ghost Reader comes in. It is a Mac application to convert text into audio, using synthetic speech. As you might have guessed, the jolly British chap you hear is not my own voice, but one of the many good synthetic voices from Infovox. This one is named Peter Happy. There is also a sad and a regular version of this voice. Other voices are shouty, whispering, mischievous, young or old. There are 24 available languages, including Dutch, my native language. If you don't want to spend extra money on synthetic voices, you don't have to, because Ghost Reader can also use the synthetic voices that come with your Mac. So what's the downside? Text-to-speech has its limitations. A computer doesn't understand language like we do. For example, it tries to pronounce abbreviations verbosely. But it doesn't know if NO followed by a dot is the abbreviation of number or it is just the word NO at the end of a sentence. So you will hear an occasional number, number when the text is in strong denial. Another example was when I was reading a theological book. The synthetic voice I used made the writer sound like he had Tourette syndrome by the way he pronounced Jesus Christ. Ghost Reader is far from perfect. But it saves me a lot of time I would have spent reading. If a book is not available as an audiobook, I can buy an ebook, crack it open, harvest the HTML files from it and convert them using Ghost Reader. It takes some effort, but to me it is worth it. Ghost Reader comes in two versions, both of which are available in the Mac App Store. The normal version is $25. I personally use Ghost Reader Plus, which costs $40. The main advantage to me is that I can use tags to change the voice if I have a document with mixed languages. Or, if I want some parts faster and other parts slower. The voices are sold separately for $15 each. You can demo each voice for a month before you buy. In my case, my reading tempo is a profession-related issue. But synthetic speech can also benefit people with dyslexia or a visual impairment. I hope you want to give Ghost Reader a chance.
Thanks for that, Terry. I don't think there's any better review than actually using the product to create the review, is there? I have long preferred in-ear earphones for two very important reasons. First, it's just not possible to get a decent bass sound from lightweight earphones without creating a seal in the ear canal. And as my hearing is more sensitive to high frequencies, I need all the bass I can get, otherwise they sound feeble. Second, my typical listening environment is out in the world. I listen to podcasts or music on my 40-minute commute. This involves riding a train with other, sometimes noisy, commuters, and walking in a city with people and cars and buses and construction and wind. I tried AirPods for one day of commuting and confirmed that these two reasons are very good ones not to invest in AirPods, as cool as they are. When Phil Schiller announced the AirPods, he also announced a few other products which would use the same W1 chip technology. The Beats Solo 3 on-ear earphones would be an interesting proposition, but not for commuting. They'd be too bulky for me. The Power Beats 3 are a sports-style in-ear earphone solution. I'm not a fan of the over-the-ear hooks which secure these, and with their sports features such as water resistance and an incredible 12-hour battery life, which I wouldn't need, the price goes up, making them the most expensive of the in-ear products. That just leaves the cheapest product, which includes the W1 chip, Beats X. These are in-ear, designed for comfort, and last 8 hours on a charge. The Beats X design is based on a strap that hangs around your neck and then continues with a wire up to each earbud. When I set off on my commute, I put them on by draping them around my neck. It's important to get them the right way around, with the inline control on the left, as the earbud design is not reversible. When I'm ready to listen, I raise the buds into my ears, then reach back to the power button, which is mounted on a lump in the strap sitting on my right collarbone. Holding the power button for 1 second turns them on. There's an LED alongside the power button which shows they're on, but this is not much use when I'm wearing them. However, a moment later they pair with my phone and I'm greeted with a chime to confirm this. I do find the power button a little difficult to operate, but manage it first time most of the time. Note the initial pairing is done similarly as for AirPods, but with a press of the Beats X power button in place of opening the case. Once paired, a single click of the center button on the inline remote then starts my podcast or music. After using a pair of wired Sennheiser earbuds for many years, I'm not used to how high up the remote sits, but it really couldn't be any lower than it is. Like on the earpods, the remote can be used to pause and skip and alter volume. I find it hard sometimes to press the slightly recessed pause button and end up hitting volume up or down instead, but located with care, it is a satisfying click and the audio responds immediately. I tend to use my Apple Watch for skipping, but always use the inline control to pause. One useful feature of the design is when I enter a shop, I can not only pause the audio, but also remove one or both buds so that I can hear clearly and also not appear rude to the serving staff. If both buds are removed, I can snap them together magnetically for a little more protection from them falling off. This magnetic snapping together is also very useful when stowing them in the included soft case. It's not an easy task stowing them. It's a little bit of a puzzle to get them to fit snugly, but I succeed every time. The case is made of silicone and the surface feels very similar to Apple's silicone iPhone cases. Charging the Beats X is as simple as plugging any lightning cable into the other lump on the strap, opposite the power control lump. They charge fully in 45 minutes, or you can get 2 hours of listening with a 5-minute charge. In real-world use, and remembering to turn them off when I'm not using them, after 3 days of use, they were at 9% charge. As best I can work out, that was around 7 hours of listening. Wearing the Beats X is as comfortable as promised, but there can be a few challenges. The wires that rise to the earbuds tend to bow outwards, which can interfere with jacket or shirt collars, although this is generally less of a problem than my old wired earbuds interfering with clothing. Some have suggested a single twist will cause the wires to go closer to your face, but in my experience this causes them to rub on my jawbone, which is uncomfortable, and also tend to pull more readily out of my ears on their own. The fit of the buds is like all such earbuds. You get 4 different size silicone tips, plus some additional wings to customize the fit, but inevitably for some people, none of them will be perfect. I've still yet to decide on the best configuration for me. A good fit is essential for the best sound quality and also to hold them in your ears in active or windy conditions. The flat profile wires do tend to catch the wind, and if you're walking into a stiff wind, I can imagine losing them off your person entirely if not careful. The sound quality is excellent. When I first began using them, I didn't like the sound as much as my Sennheisers, but now they sound almost normal to me. I think they're a touch crisper and have slightly less bass. They perform admirably in my noisy environments, letting me comfortably hear most podcasts at around 50% volume. When a good seal is maintained, they are very pleasant to listen to. If the buds begin to creep out, the bass is reduced, but it is still easy to hear spoken words, just not as pleasant. These are not noise cancelling, just noise isolating, so I can hear traffic well enough not to get run over. Overall, I'm happy with my purchase. My favourite features are how I can wear them while not actually in use, and the ability to pull my phone out of my pocket at any time without having to deal with the wires, which used to risk yanking the buds out or dropping my phone. Beats X are available in white, black, blue or grey directly from Apple and cost $149.95. That's going to wind things up for this week. If you'd like to find me online, simply head over to zkarj.me or follow me on Twitter at zkarj. Bart Bouchotz will be along next week to hold the fort before Alison and Steve return the following week. If you want to send in your dumb questions, comments and suggestions, you can email Alison at alison@podfeed.com or follow her on Twitter at podfeed. You can check out the No Silicast Google Plus community and Facebook group at podfeet.com/Google Plus and podfeet.com/Facebook. If you want to join in the fun of the live show 2 weeks from now, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday night at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic No Silicastaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.